This is HPR episode 2788 entitled, Looping in Haskell. It is hosted by Tuku Toroto, and is about 47 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Tutorto describes some loop-like constructs in Haskell.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, you're listening to Hacker Public Radio and this is Tuukka Turto. Today I'm going to talk about some looping constructs in Haskell. So Haskell is a functional programming and all the data in it is immutable, which means that once you have said that value of something is something, that value will never ever change anymore. And that makes having a regular for loops pretty hard, because you cannot have a value that increments in each after each loop. But looping is still very essential for programming, so there's different kinds of patterns for specific cases in Haskell. In a general sense, there's three main types of loops, and if you're looping through a list, one is that you are modifying values, another one is that you are taking some of the values from the list and putting them in another list, and third one is that you are using all those values to calculate some end value. And if you have if you have a loop from end to end and do some calculation based on that, its essence is the same as looping over an array or list that has numbers from end to end. So the first tool that is usually taught is recursion. And there's many different ways of doing recursion in Haskell. And one of the canonical hello world examples in Haskell is calculating Fibonacci numbers. This is a sequence of numbers that show up in a nature quite often in very, very many different places. For example, the sunflower seed in the kernel form the Fibonacci pattern. It's a sequence of numbers where every number is the sum of the two previous ones. So it starts like 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, and so on. So the first way of calculating that is doing a regular recursion. And if we have a function called fibs that takes an integer and produces an integer, we can write three cases for this. Say that fibs 0 equals 0. This is the one of terminal cases. So whenever you call this function with a value 0, you will get 0 back. And then fibs 1 equals 1, meaning that whenever you call this function with a 1, you get 1 back. These two are the starting values that you cannot calculate based on the previous one values. Then is the general case, fibs n equals fibs open bracket n minus 1 close bracket plus fibs open bracket n minus 2 close bracket. And this will calculate that if you put a number that doesn't match on the any of those two previous cases, so essence greater than 1, it will first calculate the Fibonacci number that is n1, that is from the that you get when you minus one from the n. So Fibs n minus one is the previous Fibonacci number, and then you sum it with the Fibs n minus two, which is the one before the previous Fibonacci number. So this will, if you put two in this the function, it will calculate Fibs 1 plus Fibs 0, and those matches to the two previous cases, and you get value of 1. If you put 3, you will get Fibs 2 plus Fibs 1, which is now I have to calculate actually. Then you are getting a 2. So this has been defined. The Fibonacci number has been defined in the terms of recursion, and this is this works really well for the small numbers. But if you want to calculate a bigger Fibonacci number, then the recursive way of doing that, because it will calculate all the numbers before this multiple times even, because if you have a Fibonacci, if you're going that this with the 10, then it will calculate you to, in order to calculate the what's the 10th number, it has to calculate 9th and 8th, and in order to calculate the 9th, it has to calculate 8th and 7th, and in order to calculate the 8th, it has to calculate 7th and 6th. So it will calculate numbers, previous numbers, multiple times even to get the final answer. So while this is a easy to follow example, it almost looks like the mathematical definition of the Fibonacci sequence or Fibonacci numbers. It is really slow. There's a faster ways of calculating these things, but some of those are really get really hard, really matchy, and I'm not going to talk about those. I'll try to remember to include a link into the show notes for the page that has multiple ways of doing this. Another way that uses the recursion is to calculate them in the, instead of calculating a specific one, is to define what all Fibonacci numbers are. We just define a list of integers. And in Haskell, there's a operator colon. So that on the left side is a value, on the right side is a list. And it produces a list where the first element is that value and the rest of the list is appended behind of it. And that's what we are going to use here. There's also a function called gipfit that takes a function and two lists, and it produces a new list that has been created by taking first elements of those lists, using them with that function, and then taking second elements of both lists and using those with the function, and so on. So that's where the name comes from, gipfit. It's like a gipper that combines two lists into one. So now that we know those, we can define all Fibonacci numbers. And this is all Fibs equals 0, colon, 1, colon, gipfit, open bracket, plus, close bracket, all Fibs, open bracket, tail, all Fibs, close bracket, and that's it. So what does this do is define a list that the first element is 0, second element is 1, and rest is a list that you get when you take this list that we are defining and chip that with plus. So you're summing the elements, you take the all Fibs, which is the whole list, and then you take tail of the all Fibs, which is everything but the first element. So the third element of the list is 0 plus 1, which is 1. Fourth element of the list is the 1 plus 1, which is 2, and so on. And this is really funny way of, in my opinion, when I first saw this way of calculating things, I couldn't wrap my head around how is this even possible, because you are defining a list in terms of itself, and this list is essentially, it's infinite. It contains all Fibonacci numbers. So if you are defining a list like this, why isn't it immediately running out of the memory? But this is because Haskell is a non-strict language. It evaluates things usually as little as possible. It doesn't evaluate values until absolutely necessarily required, or if it's specifically instructed to evaluate something. For example, in most programming languages, when you are calling a function, the function application, first you evaluate the parameters that are going inside of the function, and then you evaluate the result of the function. In Haskell, the values that are given as a parameters aren't evaluated when they are given to the function. If there's a function call that produces a value and that value is given as a parameter, if a function parameter is a function call in itself to something, that function call isn't evaluated until that parameter is needed inside of that another function. So this is the reason why you can build an infinite list of Fibonacci numbers without running out of memory. If you were to print this out on the console, for example, then it would take a while and you would eventually run out of the memory. But you can always, for example, take first 100 elements of the list and print those out, and then you're not running out of the memory. Or you can skip first 10,000 elements and then take one. Then you are getting 10,000 first Fibonacci number, and it's really fast. I tried it in my old computer. The answer came immediately, while in the previous Fibonacci calculation, I didn't wait until it would have completed. So that's another way of doing a recursion. And if we were to add, if we had a list of integers and we wanted to add one to each of those lists, this is a one looping construct that you are going through a list and adding one to the elements. In Haskell, you cannot modify a list. You have to create a new one. So if we had a function called add one that takes a list of integers and produces a new list of integers, we could define it. One way of defining is to say that add one open bracket close bracket equals open bracket close bracket. This is the terminal case again. If you have an empty list and you try to add one to that, you're going to get an empty list. And then the second case is add one open paren x colon xs close paren equals x plus 1 colon add 1 xs. And that's it. So what does this second definition mean? It means that when you are calling add 1 with a list, when you are calling add 1 with a list that has elements on it, the x is matched to the first element on that list, and xs contains rest of the list. It may be empty list, the xs, or it may contain who knows how many items. But the thing is that the x is the first element of the list, and xs is the rest of the list. And then we then we just say the result of this is x plus 1, because we want to add 1 to each of the list, and then we add that to list, which we get by calling add 1 with xs. So basically we are adding 1 to the first element of the list, and then we are adding, calling recursively the add 1 with rest of the elements. And if there's elements left, it will go again, come to that second case, keep adding ones to the elements until comes our case where there is no any more elements left in the list, then it matches to the first add one definition, returns an empty list, and the whole recursion stops there. You have to remember that if you write it this way, you are essentially you are reversing the list. If you have a list of 1, 2, 3, and you feed it to this function, you're going to get back 4, 3, 2. But this is one way of processing a list, or looping over it, doing things. And the third pattern is, no, sorry, second pattern that I talked earlier is that you take all these elements and do something to all of them to produce a new value. So if you had a list and you wanted to add all elements on it together, one way of doing it is to make a list sum all that takes integer, list of integers, and produces integer. The initial integer is the starting value that we are going to use. We need that to accumulate the results that we are getting while we go through the list. So sum all. First definition is sum all n open bracket close bracket equals n. So if you have an empty list, then you are getting the initial value back, or the n that was given. This is the terminal case. This means that the list has been processed, or there was no list to process at all. Then the second case is sum all n open paren x colon xs close paren equals sum all open paren n plus x close paren xs. So this is the recursion part. So if again the open paren x colon xs close paren matches a list, first element of the list and the tail of the list, and we calling recursively sum all, and in that accumulator part we are putting n plus x, and then items to process we are putting the tail of the list. So whatever we have accumulated so far, we add to the first element, and then we call to the sum all to the rest of the list. So this will go through a list one element at a time, summing them up until you get final result in the end. And the third pattern that I mentioned is that you have some elements that you are looping over, and you are moving some of those into the another list. You are making decision that is this an element that I'm interested in. Again, if we have list of integers and want to produce a list of even integers, we can do it by following definition. We even only open bracket close bracket equals open bracket close bracket. This is again the terminal case, the thing that stops the recursion. If we have an empty list, we are producing an empty list. Then there's the actual logic part, even only open paren x colon xs close paren equals. If even x, then x colon even only xs, else even only xs. Meaning, even is a function that when given a number will return boolean if it's a even number or not. So if x is even, then we are returning. Now I should start thinking, do I have a bug here? If we have a even there, then we would be returning x and then adding, no, there's no bug here. It's morning, so, okay, so if even x, so if x is even, then x colon a even only x. So if the x is even, then we are returning the x and the rest of the list that we have processed with even only. Else even only x. So if x isn't even, then we are only returning the rest of the list that has been processed with even only. And this will recursively go through the list and pick up the numbers from the numbers, even numbers from that list. And kinda I have to try out that it actually works like I thought it would work. Yeah. If I call even only with a list from 1 to 6, I get back a list with 2, 4, and 6. So it works. That's the problem with the recursion sometimes, that it might be a bit hard to wrap your head around how the thing goes, how the logic goes. It's pretty simple construct, but sometimes you just get a mind lock, and then you're just going like, does this really work? What's going on here? But that's why we have more tools, because writing recursion by hand gets tedious, and sometimes it's hard to follow if you're not used to that. So, and we like to abstract common patterns and give them a name, because then you can say that we are going to do thing X to this list instead of describing that we are going to do this recursion thing and it's going to work like this. So abstracting out common patterns and giving them names makes it easier to talk about those things when you know those names and they are common to with the people that you're talking to. And that's one thing that I have had trouble with the Haskell, learning all the funny names for these things. So there are many tools of doing these things, but following three things will get you started. The first one was you are producing a new list, and for that there's a MAT, so in a general or even more general FMAP, but they, in case of the lists, they will work in the same way. So MAT is a function that takes a function from A to B and a list of A and produces a list of B. A and B can be anything. So function that can process the types of items that are in a list and produces a, and that will produce a new list. So if we were to add one to a list, we could write that map open paren plus one close paren and then the list. And that's it. We are going to apply plus one function to a list of elements. And if we are going to call a map open paren plus one close paren open bracket one stop then close bracket, then we are going to get a list from 2 to 11. Haskell has this way of that you can, for example, with numbers, you can define a range by starting with a starting value, open bracket, starting value, stop, stop, full stop, stop, whatever that's called, piste, and ending bracket, and ending value, close bracket. And this will produce a list of items from starting to ending. If you omit the ending value, you are going to get an infinite list. That works just fine. You're not going to run out of memory until you try to, for example, print that out on the screen. Or try to evaluate the whole thing. And for example, if you had a, if you wanted to, with another thing is that you can run mat odd list. For example, open bracket one, full, stop stop then close bracket, and you are going to get a list of booleans that are going to tell if this value was odd or not, odd or even. So you're going to get a list of true, false, true, false, true, false, and so on. Another pattern I talked about was taking a list and compressing that to a one value, going through the all the values and doing some calculation based on those and reducing it to a single value. And for Haskell, there's a many functions for that code, and they are, all of them are fold something. So there's a fold R, fold L, fold L prime, and so on. The basic idea of all of them is the same, but there's a little bit of differences how exactly they are doing those things. And the choice between them depends on how big list you have and what kind of characteristics of the processing you are after. I'm going to include a link that talks about intricacies of the folds. Not going to go through them here because I'm not that good explaining them. I barely know the difference between them. But these folds, they take a function, initial value, and a list, and then it reduces the list into a single value. So it does that by applying the function to the initial value and the first element of the list, and then it will take that result and apply the function again to that value and the next item of the list. And it will continue this until the list is empty and you are left with a single value. So for example, fold R is a, it takes a function from A to B to B. So it's a function of two elements A and B that produces a B. It takes a B, that's the initial value, and it takes a list of A and produces a B. It's a, starting to be a bit long batch signature. And again, A and B can be anything. If we were called to fold R, open parent plus close parent, zero, open bracket, one, stop, stop, then, close bracket, we are going to get a value of 55, because we are summing, we are calling this plus function, starting with the one plus, zero plus one, and then plus two, plus three, plus four, until we have summed all of them together. This is so common pattern that there's a function called sum that will, if we give sum open bracket one, stop, stop, then close bracket, we are going to get a 55 back. It does the same, essentially the same thing. And then the another fold is fold L. You can think that there's a fold R as a fold right and fold L as a fold left. And fold L takes a, it works in the same way, similar way, that it takes a But here the function is from B to A to B, and then initial value B, and list of A, and result is a B. A and B can be anything. So fold L, open parent plus close parent, open 0, open bracket, 1, stop, then close bracket, produces a 55. Same result. But here if you compare the signatures, the function in the fold R is from A to B to B, and fold L is from B to A to B. So they are doing the application in a little bit different. Well, they are doing it in an opposite order. In the plus, it doesn't matter because let me rephrase. In plus, with small lists, it doesn't matter which one you use because plus takes two values of the same type. So A and B is the same value in case of plus. But if you have a list of, say, for example, if you have a list of invoices and you are calculating a total of the invoices, then A can be A is a invoice and B is a money. That's a type. And here you have to think how you are going to construct it, what kind of function you are going to give it, and are you going to use the fold R or fold L, because the type has to match. You cannot sum invoice and money. You have to take the money part of the invoice and sum it the previous money to get a new money. Okay, so I'm going to include the link to the show notes that talk more about the folds, so that you if you are interested, you can go through them in time, and the explanation there is much better than what I could do here. If you are interested on the intermediate values, because folds produce only end result, there's a scan that's similar to the fold. There's many scans, and they return the, instead of returning only the end result, they result the intermediate results. For example, scan R takes a function from A to B to B, initial value B, list of A, and produces a list of B. So if you compare that to the fold R, it's almost identical, but instead of producing a B, it produces a list of B. So let's try this out. If we were to call scan R, open parent plus close parent, 0, open bracket, 1, stop, then close bracket, we are going to get a list which is 55, 54, 52, 49, 45, 40, 34, 27, 19, 10, and 0. So you can see that the 55 is the end result. It's the same result that the fold R produces. And the next one looks the same as the 55 minus 1. And then it's 54. And the next one is 54 minus 2, which is 49. And then it's 49 minus 4. I think I skipped one there. But in any case, you can see that the right end of the list is the initial value, 0. And then there's a 10, which is the last element of the list that we gave to it. And then there's the next element is one before the last element, 9 plus 10, 19. So the list here looks like that it is built from the right of the, taking the rightmost value of the original list and adding it to the initial list and then taking the next to that and adding that. So it's kind of, it looks kind of backward. But here you can see how the fold R processes the one. If you look scan L, then that looks like a fold L. So it's a function that it takes a parameter function from B to A to B, initial value B, list of A, and produces list of B. And if you use scan L, open parent plus, close parent, 0, open bracket 1, stop 10, close bracket. So we are using scan L to plus list of 1 to 10. We are going to get a result of 0, 1, 3, 6, 10, 15, 21, 28, 36, 45, and 55. So this looks much more like what you would expect to happen if you are summing all elements in a list together and putting them the intermediate values of the onto the list. So which one to use again, it depends on the case. I haven't really used scan pretty much never at all. Haven't had a need for that. The last type that we were talking about, or last general pattern, was that you have a list and you want to take some values of that list and discard rest. So for example, when I was learning programming in a basic, I would have written a for loop that is from 0 to the length of the array and then checked each element in that index and doing some check, and based on that result of the check would have added that to the another array and incremented some counter to tell me where to put next element. But here you cannot do that easily. So you can write that recursive definition that we did earlier, or you can use a general pattern called filter. This is a function that takes a function and a list, and it will return a new list where each element satisfies that check. And for example, if we were called to filter odd, open bracket 1, stop 10, close bracket, we would be processing a list from 1 to 10 and taking only the values that are odd. So end result is a list 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. And if we wanted to know all the even numbers in the world, we can do that by calling filter even open bracket 1 stop close bracket. So we are omitting the end range. So that will produce a list that starts with 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, and it will go in theory infinitely, but at some point you will run out of memory and it will crash your computer or crash the program. How to deal with this is that if you want to see, for example, five first elements of that list, you can say take $5, filter even, open bracket 1, stop, close bracket, and that will produce a list 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. That take is a function that takes two parameters. First is the number of items to take, and the second one is a list. And that dollar there is to there's a, I don't remember what it's called, but in essentially it means that first evaluate the right side of this definition and then use that value to the left side. You could replace that with a bracket, not brackets, parents. So writing take 5, open paren, filter even, and so on, close paren. But I like using the dollar there. It's just there to it's just there to instruct that the right side of this path should be evaluated first, and then use that value on the left side. Okay, those are the basic ways of looping over a list, and as I said, the looping from some number to another number and doing some operation is basically the same as looping over a list of numbers. There are even more tools. I could actually go through a couple of them quickly. I'm going to include a link of some of them. So in case you want to do some list construction, you can use these, and when you can construct lists, then you can loop over them. And so I'm not going to give examples this time. Just a brief overview of what's available. These are in the Prelude, that is the basic library of the Haskell. It contains all kinds of interesting things. So first one is iterate. This is this takes a function from A to A, and then takes a and produces a list of A. And this is a funny function because it takes that initial value and it applies that function from A to A into that. And then it on the end result of that, it puts into the list, and then it applies A to A again to that value that you first produced, puts that into the list and applies the function again to that. So it keeps calling that function to those values that it's producing, and producing more values. I don't know where to use this. I just caught my eye and looked interesting. Then there's the repeat, takes A and produce a list of A. And this will produce an infinite list of one item, I mean of one value. So if you call repeat with 5, you are going to get an infinite list of 5s. Replicate takes an int and A and produces a list of A. So this is similar to repeat, but it creates a finite list. The first parameter controls how long list to create. And then there's a cycle that takes a list of A and produces a list of A. This will repeat, create an infinite list that repeats the initial list that you gave it. So if you call it with 1, 2, 3, you're going to get a infinite list of 1, 2, 3. So 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, ad infinitum. And with those you can create different kinds of lists and then loop over them and do what you want to do. There's even more tools, of course, for specific situation. And it's all about now knowing or finding the right tools for the situation. And there's luckily, you don't have to remember them immediately. You don't have to read a big thick book and memorize that. There's a tool called Hoogle that is at the https://hoogle.haskell.org. And that's a Haskell API search engine. That's a really, really useful tool. I use it often, all the time. You can use that to search if you know name of the function, but you don't remember where to find that, you can use Hoogle to find that. It tells you where it is, in which package. Or if you have a general idea that you want to do something, but you don't know how to do that, you can use the Hoogle to search that. For example, you know that that you want. For example, if you wanted to, for example, you don't remember what repeat does, or rather you don't remember repeat as a name, you could enter a search into the Google A arrow list of A, and it would find repeat for you. So you can use that to search for the names that you know that are there. You can use it, and that's not only limited to the function names. You can search for types also, and you can also search for the type signatures. So if you have a general idea of what you want to do, and you know how to express it in terms of the type signature, you can use Google to help you find a suitable function. And I'm using that quite a bit to find when I suspect that this sounds so common case that there might be a function for this somewhere. So instead of finding that by myself, I use Google. Okay, so that I'm starting to ramble, so time to wrap it up. So to recap, Haskell is a functional language. All the data is immutable. You cannot change something as it has been assigned or set. And that's because Haskell is a non-strict, meaning that the values are not evaluated, or rather that values are evaluated at the last possible point. When you need a value, you are going to evaluate it, and not sooner. So you cannot, if a value could change, this would lead into all kinds of problems. But in Haskell, because all the data is immutable, you can defer the evaluation to the last possible point. If you are really thinking about what's happening under the hood in Haskell program, you don't necessarily even know in what order your program executes. Because in Haskell, that does not matter. Time does not matter. If you have a function that depends only on the values that are on your computer, then time, or inside of your program, the time does not matter at all. As long as the things are evaluated when they are needed, that's okay. You don't need to know in what order they are evaluated. But when you start talking about interactions, for example, writing to the disk or talking over the network or reading the user input, then of course, or printing to the screen, then of course the time matters awfully lot. But that's a topic for some another time. So Haskell, immutable data. Regular for loops don't exist, but you have other tools at your disposal. The most common are map, fold, and filter. And there's other tools that you can find with Google. Okay, that's all. Catch you later.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.